Hello and welcome to this podcast. It's a Wednesday morning and I'll be seeing you soon at school. I'm going to talk this morning about the right to privacy position paper and it's a little bit about how to do it, some of the ideas. I'm going to try and make it quick so I won't cover everything. The essential question is, why is the right to privacy so important but unenumerated? Let me answer that question briefly first, then I'll go into a couple cases, what the right to privacy is, a couple cases, and the connections I'd like for you to make, then try and get through the outline and not taking up too much time. The right to privacy is so important because it's been part of our history throughout since our founding. We're all to our 200 years, and but it is not listed in the Constitution. That's what enumerated means. Is it numbered? It's not numbered in the Constitution as a numbered right, like freedom of speech is, for instance. The First Amendment, or right to bear arms, the Second Amendment. It's unenumerated, but it does exist through other rights that are listed. Probably your thesis on this is going to be that the right to privacy is so important because people expect to be left alone, and it's unenumerated because there are other rights than those listed. That's a good thesis. You could also say, you could take the other side and say, the right to privacy doesn't exist because it isn't enumerated. It's not a listed right. We can't go around creating rights as we feel like it. The definition of the right to privacy is the right of individuals to control the collection and use of personal information about themselves. The right of individuals to control the collection and use of personal information about themselves. That's pretty much the way it is in this day and age. In the information age, that is, for instance, you might have a medical condition that you don't want people to know about. You want to keep that private to yourself, or certainly your social security number and your credit card number are private information you don't want other people to have because they can use that to hurt you. Other issues, though, might be sexual orientation issues, might be a private issue. You would say it's my business, how I feel about my sexual orientation is private. Or certainly the Bush administration has had a hard time in the last month. We're now in January of 06. Revealing that they've been wiretapping, they've been listening to people's phone conversations without a search warrant, or drug testing is a private right. One place you don't have privacy is at work. Your computer at work is not a private computer. It's owned by the company, and any work you do on there can be recorded by the business. You don't have a private right at work. But as an individual in your own home, you do. So the right to privacy emanates from penumbras, I love that word, penumbras, or shadows of other rights. For instance, the First Amendment gives you the right to a freedom of conscience, the religion and speech and press. The Third Amendment gives you the right to be protected from courting of soldiers in your home. The Fourth Amendment says the government can't come into your house without a search warrant, good reason. The Fifth Amendment gives you the right to remain silent, that's a private right. And of course, the Ninth Amendment says there are other rights than those listed. So you take all those together and put it into one package, and it gives a hint of that the framers intended there to be a right to privacy. It was in the case of Griswold versus Connecticut in 1964 that the right to privacy was defined, and that's what they said. They said there are penumbras of privacy, and the interesting case in Griswold is that a woman was arrested for the possession of birth control, and 1965, sorry. She was arrested for the possession of birth control and by the state of Connecticut, and she said, I've got the private right to control my own reproduction when I get pregnant or when I don't get pregnant. The state can't tell me that. Earlier, Justice Louis Brandeis said, I think it was in the 20s, the right to privacy is the right to be left alone by the government. And that's pretty much it, the right to be left alone. You know, the government will go after people it doesn't like who are trying to have different opinions than it. But in the technological age, the right to privacy is one in which we've got to watch the collection of information about ourselves because people, not the government, will use it to hurt us by taking our money and our identity. So we've got Griswold versus Connecticut. Roe versus Wade is also a privacy case. In 1973, the abortion case, women have the private right to control their conception. Again, it's like, a lot like Griswold. It was based on Griswold that women have the right to decide whether privately whether or not they're going to stay pregnant, and that life doesn't begin until birth, not a conception, and therefore, but you know, that of course started the whole anti-abortion movement. The rights of the life begins at the moment of conception, and that the government's got the duty to protect life is not a private right of the mother. And so you could get in that. I don't want this paper to be an abortion paper. I want it to be a privacy paper. But you could certainly get into that idea. There's also the parental notification of abortions, like in Hartigan versus Zebretz in 1987, that girls under the age of 18 do have a private right to keep private their abortions from their parents. That's a whole interesting idea. Overall, the right to privacy has been in the whole abortion arena anyway, and in others has been limited. For instance, in the drug and drug tests of athletes, I think it was the Verona case in 2001. Verona School District versus Acton, 2001. Supreme Court ruled that students, especially student athletes, don't have the private right to be protected from random drug tests, because the right to an education is more important, outweighs the right to privacy in their case. And of course, that would do a case, is one we've got to mention in the mock trial EPO case that we're going to be doing. Some of the connections, here's a very, very important connection, and that is that Article 2 of the Arizona Constitution does lists a right to privacy. Article 2 says there is a right to privacy. It is enumerated in the Arizona Constitution, and it has been since 1912. It is, the right to privacy is an implied right. It's not a listed right, but it is implied. There's the idea of the private and public domain. The private domain being your house, your home, things you do in your house, your home. The public domain being the world where government can influence. In the private domain, you should have the right to do what you want to do as long as you're not breaking the law or hurting other people. The First Amendment is a free expression. Conscience is a private right. In Republican government, the idea that we should elect people who will uphold the right to privacy, not make it smaller or less, not control it by, you got to make up your mind. We shouldn't say that. You might want to have a person be elected in Republican government that will control some of these things that people are calling as their private right, like sexual orientation or parental notification. On the other hand, you might want to elect people that will uphold those rights. So you want to know, where your candidate stands on the privacy issues before you vote for them in the Republican government connection. Federalism is an excellent connection with the Arizona Constitution, Article 2. Arizona Constitution, Article 2, like I said, does enumerate a right to privacy specifically, and the U.S. Constitution does not. Therefore, it makes it a federal issue, because federalism is defined as being the relationship or the definition of power between the national government and the states. Limited government, we want to have a government that is limited, that they can't get into our private lives. And some of the articles I think are good. I put one on the case. I'm going to put a little more on some other issues, some views against the right to privacy or enumerated right. And let's see, the national ID card is a big issue in terms of violating people's rights. It's going to have lots of information about you. The Google satellite map thing, where people can see your house from space, just on their computer. There's one in 30 years after ruling, ambiguity, anxiety surround abortion debate. Again, more on privacy there. Threat to privacy, what is going on that will uphold your privacy. There's some interesting articles in the collection about how the internet is helping privacy, not hurting it. It's increasing privacy, not threatening it. In the outline, go through that quickly. Of course, first paragraph is going to be background on what is the right to privacy, that it's unenumerated. Then you're going to say your thesis, as I mentioned earlier. Transition to the second paragraph. Second paragraph, you're going to have a quote. See the summary of the Griswold versus Connecticut case. If you want to have a quote that you can use, there's the full case and there's the summary at the link. You could then be sure you sandwich transition to the third paragraph, which would be the other side, in which case you'll argue that the right to privacy does not exist. Or some say it does not exist because it is unenumerated. The fourth paragraph, and fifth if you can, and sixth if you can, will be connections, things like Republican government, federalism. You could do those two easily. Republican government on voting for people who want to change privacy to increase it or limit it. Of course, federalism, the Article 2 of the Arizona Constitution. And the last paragraph will always state significance and restate the conclusion. One thing I forgot to mention is that this privacy issue comes down to this idea of judicial activism or judicial restraint. A lot of people say that the courts, judicials, are being too active, that is, too creative in interpreting the Constitution. They should just go with what the Constitution says, not what they think it means. And that's judicial activism. The Constitution is a Constitution. It's the fundamental law. The courts can't go and reinterpret it whenever they feel like it. Judicial restraint is the idea that that the courts have got to hold back in interpreting the Constitution based on what they what the Constitution says, not on what they think they want it to say. And that would be make an interesting part for your thesis in paragraph 2, judicial activism or judicial restraint, in paragraph 3. You can argue in paragraph 2 that it's good we have active courts that are reinterpreting the Constitution, kind of a continuing constitutional convention, or you could argue that it's bad because rights are being created without meaning. Anyway, that's quickly the position paper. And if you have any other questions, feel free to come see me after school. Be sure you see the website. Thank you very much.